You're listening to My White Belt, the best jiu-jitsu podcast in the world. Enjoy.
Welcome to the My White Belt Show. I'm your host, Jim Trick, back for another exciting episode. I'm glad that you are here. It was an exciting day yesterday at First Colony Jiu-Jitsu in Marblehead, Massachusetts, where I train. We had our in-house winter tournament where white belts and blue belts from our academy, from our sister schools, that would be Second Colony up in Gloucester, Massachusetts, under the leadership of Josh Ulrich and 20,000 Leagues Jiu-Jitsu in Danvers, Massachusetts, under the leadership of the mighty Kurt Veed. Those gentlemen brought their crews down to do battle. It was a really fun day. We had some super fights. And it was one of those days where you get to experience not only your immediate jiu-jitsu family, but you get to connect with your extended family. It's like a family reunion. And it's really, really fun and exciting to watch people grow and expand and to see where their game is. It's also helpful and maybe a little frustrating to get a clear sense of what needs work. So, you know, our guys did great, and we also entered this week with a sense of what we need to work on to improve. And always ready, always up for the challenge. We are not here to bake cakes. We are not here to go backwards, and we are not here to make excuses. So we go into this next week ready to rock and roll. It is really fun to watch people get better. Even people, guys from our academy and women from our academy, who have been training for, you know, in some cases, just a couple of months, a few months, just getting in there and doing great. Massive shout out to 16-year-old Serena for calling out one of her fellow night class guys and basically saying, "I want to do this. I need someone to fight," because we had some super fights as well. And so Serena called out Deb, and it's just a great match between those two. Anyhow, I hope that your academy feels like a family. If your academy doesn't feel like a family, I hope that you'll be the person who steps up and says, "Hey, let's all go out. Let's go grab pizza after this, or let's go do this, that, or the other thing." We got to watch Mike Everett get his black belt yesterday. So there's a few guys at our academy that I've been training with since I was since my first day. And yeah, sure, I like getting promotions, and I like getting a stripe or a belt. I enjoy that, but I don't know. I was pretty moved yesterday watching your friend and training partner, but particularly when it's somebody that was kind of showing you the ropes as you were coming up. Watching that person get their black belt is a pretty big deal. So got to watch Lieutenant Mike Everett get his black belt yesterday. Immediately started calling him Professor. And, you know, he's been just training forever, and it's such a huge accomplishment. I hope that, so now I'm kind of like, this whole front end is just going to be me gushing about my academy. I hope that's okay. If it does nothing more than inspire you to create this kind of community at your academy, then I have done my job. But after a full day of tournament, and then, you know, we had pizza after, we all hung out after. Mike Frizzy is one of our black belts. He is one of the owners of First Colony, and he worked really hard. He worked really hard yesterday to make a great tournament for us, and to just create vibes and have it be orderly and fun and to feel like the kind of thing that everybody would want to be at. But then He stayed through, made a giant pot of chili, and transformed the academy into a living room where we all got to hang out and watch the fight last night. So that was, it was really neat to walk back into the academy at around 7 o'clock at night and to see that, you know, he had set up a huge video screen and all of our training partners were sitting there, you know, on couches and chairs that we're fortunate enough to have some really cool furniture at our academy. I think that's thanks to Justin Cook, but everybody was sitting in our academy and it literally looked like a living room. It had been transformed into a living room. And whenever anybody would walk in, everybody would clap. And there's just a lot of love in that room. I'm eternally grateful for First Colony. We're a funny crew. But I wouldn't change a thing. Okay, so speaking of our funny little crew, we have as our guest this week Parker Jameson, and her pen name is Ox DeVere, and she has written a book called The Rage of Gin. So she's an author. She works in film. She's written, you know, countless screenplays, and she is one of these people who just whatever she decides she's gonna be good at, she gets good at. And she's just become a fast friend, not only for me personally, but for a lot of us at our academy. Parker is the kind of person that you want to have around. She is generous in conversation and really just an all-around good / fascinating soul. So there's not a whole lot. We're going to talk about her book, and I will put information on how you can get your copy of The Rage of Gin available on Amazon.com and I believe also at her personal website. I will make sure that all that information is in place by the end of the show so that you can click and support her. But for right now, all you have to do is sit back and enjoy this conversation with Jiu-Jitsu Blue Belt, author, and all-around badass, Parker Jameson. Parker Jameson, welcome to the My White Belt Show. What a joy it is to have you here today.
Good to see you. It's never often enough.
How weird is this that we're like on a Zoom call together?
Kind of strange. It's like FaceTiming friends.
It's a little weird. So Liam came on the show. I don't know if you listened to his episode, but he had literally never done a Zoom call before.
Aww, that's adorable.
It was really funny.
Do you think he's done one since?
No, I don't. No. I don't. And yeah. when I brought it up on the episode, I go, Liam, have you even ever done a Zoom call before? He went, looking at you on my TV screen. No, I've never done this. And it just like literally seemed like the Jetsons for him, which is to me.
So you can both teach each other things.
Maybe. can anybody really teach Lee? I mean, you know my coach well enough to know that no one's probably teaching him anything.
But it's never over. There's always a chance.
Oh, no. I will still try to convince him of things. But he has pretty much decided in his life that it's basically Jordan Peterson and John Danaher are the only people that he will ever listen to again for the rest of his life.
Oh, my. I don't know Liam that well, actually. He's like the elusive one at First Colony. I hear all about him because everyone I know knows him. And, you know, he's got his own legend going on. But
yeah,
unfortunately, no, I've never even been in class with him.
No, he's pretty great. I love him. And he's completely changed my life. And he's out of his mind. But yeah, no, you are much more adept and comfortable at the modern world, Zooming, for example. It's just normally when you and I see each other, it's either on the mat or over coffee, that kind of thing. And it's really fun getting to do this show, because as I've been reading up on you, it's so funny the things that you learn about a person from the internet.
It's all out there, isn't it? Scary.
You were raised in a home filled with ancient artifacts. What is that about?
That is kind of true. To this day, my parents still have like an Egypt room, and some of it was bought and paid for. Some of it came directly from Egypt. My dad was born there and grew up there. He lived there till he was 14.
Why?
So, because his dad was like a doctor missionary and helped start a hospital in Tanta, Egypt, which is near Alexandria. It still stands to this day.
That's so rad.
Yeah. Despite looking like Mitt Romney, he speaks perfect Egyptian Arabic, which is a pretty cool party trick, gotta say.
Does your mom ever make, do they know how to make, or your dad, make Egyptian food at all?
Not a thing. Not a thing. He loves it, but he does not cook, unfortunately, and did not teach us Arabic as children. We'd probably all be in the CIA right now.
We have a guy at our academy named Mahmoud who he and his wife are Egyptian, and he has started every couple of weeks bringing me food from Egypt.
Oh, I'm joining your gym now.
He's starting a business. They're starting a little secret supper club that, like, if you kick them a few bucks, she'll make you dinner, and it is ridiculous. It's unbelievably delicious.
You're the best connection, Jim.
I've got you. I mean,
Egyptian supper club.
It's so funny because looking at your bio, I'm like, we have all of these weird, like all these weird things in common in terms of professional creative pursuits and the things that we've gone down the road with. I'll open sort of with this. I mean, we're part of a family, you and I. Well, we're part of a couple families. I mean, we're living as adult creatives in 2024, working to do our work. You most recently with The Rage of Gin, and me with whatever I'm doing, music, podcasting, all that weird stuff. But then there's other overlaps. So we are creatives. We share the same faith, and we are both jujitsu cousins. I mean, we're brother and sister, but our schools are like cousin schools almost.
Pretty much.
So for you, when your name comes up in the family, right? So when your name comes up, either you're going to come down and train, or you have come down to train. The thing that everybody says about you behind your back is Parker's really good.
I thank you.
Like, what a great, and they don't say she's strong, and they don't say she's good for a girl. They say Parker is really good. And like, good people are saying Parker's really good. So normally we would sort of like do, yeah, we've got a lot to cover, but I want to get right into the jujitsu piece from you and get a sense of how did you even find it? Have you heard about Grapple Guard body wash? If you can't spot the smelly person at your academy, there's a chance that you might be the smelly person at your academy. But even if you're not the smelly person at your academy, you've got to do your work to prevent skin diseases. And Grapple Guard body wash is especially formulated for people who like to roll on the ground, either in their gym jams or in funny, sweaty spandex outfits. So, want to be a great training partner? Keep yourself clean. Want to be a generous training partner? Buy a bottle of Grapple Guard body wash for your friend. Be a secret admirer to the stinky person at your academy and buy them some Grapple Guard. Go to grappleguardsoap.com. This is the body wash that I use. I will never promote anything that I don't use and believe in. Grapple Guard is our new sponsor. They are the official body wash of my white belt. It's a small company. A guy named Jeff sent me a bunch of Grapple Guard to see if I liked it. I love it. It's great. Use the discount code TRICK10 at grappleguardsoap.com. Save money and support my white belt and keep your gym protected from people catching the creeping crud. Come on, filthy white belts. We can do better. We got to clean up. It's got tea tree oil. It's got all kinds of stuff that does good stuff. People will roll with you, and after they tap, they will whisper, "Wow, you smell nice." And then you'll be able to say, "It's because of Grapple Guard."
I have two older brothers. One who's much older, and he, for some reason, started watching UFC at UFC 1. So when I was like 12, 13, 14, my other brother and I would kind of like jump in and watch this incredibly violent sport we weren't really allowed to watch. And he got really passionate about it. To this day, I don't know anyone who knows more about mixed martial arts than him, who doesn't actually practice it or compete. And so I grew up watching jiu-jitsu. I actually first joined a gym in 2008, when I lived down in Orlando. I joined a Gracie Baja. I was obsessed. I even started doing Muay Thai, but I was so obsessed that I started getting distracted from school. And school was, I went to a film program that was like 70 hours a week easily of school. So I really couldn't do it. So I actually had to stop. I'm a pretty all or nothing person. I had to stop. And I told myself, I will go back. There was just no question that one day I'd go back. And, you know, those days you realize life is actually today. Like, this is my life. My life doesn't start then. It's actually right now. And so I found my way to a school in Salem where my brother had briefly trained for like 3 months ages ago. And that's kind of the place where I know everyone from.
Was that the school that shall not be named?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah.
Yes. So my professor right now came from there. Your professor came from there. Oh, professor, that's so weird to say.
I know. Yeah. I know. Does Nate, how does Nate handle being called professor? Is he okay with it?
I've never seen him called professor. Yeah. It's like coach. Liam
can't stand it. Liam just wants to be called Liam.
I'm like, just on my white belt. I'm like in your lingo right now. I've never called him that. And it's going to be strange. But
Professor Nate Morrison, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's going to catch on. So that place spawned some of just the best human beings I know in jiu-jitsu. And I'm so grateful that I started there. I left just after COVID. Really changed.
So did you go after watching UFC with your brothers and becoming obsessed? Did you go in thinking that you were going to train to protect yourself, to compete? Did you have any sense of any of that?
At the beginning, the guys at Gracie Baja really got a kick out of me for some reason. And they're like, "You want to compete? You want to compete?" And I was like, I cannot spend any more time in here. I can't do it. So I said, no, I can't even think about it. No, I've actually never thought about jiu-jitsu for self-protection. I don't really think that way. I kind of don't think about self-protection at all, or self-defense. But I'm sure it would be helpful. But I love the physical problem solving. I love it. Like when I watch a tutorial or something, I'm consumed with like guessing what they're going to do next. Like that's how I actively stay engaged. I'm not watching, trying to just memorize steps. I'm watching at each step. Like, oh, I think he's going to do this. I think you need to take care of this problem next. I think you need to solve this. And so that's what I absolutely love about it. I like being physically active, strong. I weightlift. And so, yeah, I just think the melding is fascinating. I love it.
When you started initially, when you were in Florida, if you had to guess, how long did you train? It sounds like it probably didn't last very long.
A few months, 2 or 3 months, I think.
All gi at that point?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you training both
gi now? Was not fashionable. No, not really. Occasionally, I've done no gi a handful of times. And, the honest reason, I don't love other people's sweat that much. That's really why. I like the physical realm of, like...
You feel like you get less sweat in a gi than in a rash guard?
I feel like that.
Hmm.
They're not slippery with sweat. And that's when I feel like it's taken over everything.
I do have to say that particularly in our old academy, our friend Matt, the Ashi kid, Dolan, everybody drink, just got his brown belt. That guy in the last place that we trained, which was like an abandoned dance studio, the first thing he would do would be walk in and crank the heat up to 80.
That was him?
That was him.
And by the so hot.
He's such a bastard. He would, and I love him, but that guy would literally... He is so methodical, a human being. He would like walk in, give you a nod, and walk immediately to the thermostat. And no matter what it was up to, turn it up 5 degrees. And by the time we were done, finally Liam was like, okay, we have to have like a normal temperature. Somebody open a window or do something. And the whole mat would look like a puddle.
I mean, I know there's hot yoga, but I don't think hot jujitsu should be a thing.
Listen, jujitsu for me is like, I literally sweat staring at a wall. So, I mean, if we're going to walk into a room that's like a sauna, I don't care if we're in our gym jams or in our funny little spandex outfits, I'm probably going to sweat. So I would prefer to have a comfortable temperature.
Work
your way up to it. I will, my role will be my thermostat. And these days, it will be pretty cool because, I don't know, rolling has been tricky for me for the last 7 weeks. How long were you out with your injury?
Oh, about 8 to 10 months. And about
was that
a year
long?
Before, yeah, about a year before it felt like, okay, I can put my arm down and not flinch. Yeah, it was for the uninitiated or those who were not there. I was at your gym one day and I was actually rolling with someone from my gym. So we're friends. I know him. I rolled with him. Big guy. I was on top. So there was sort of a scramble and he went to sweep me and I posted my right arm out. And the sweep kind of somehow kept going despite the post. And I couldn't pick my hand up because all my weight was on it at that point. And so my elbow just sort of wrenched. It was obnoxiously painful. I remember Arrest was getting his blue belt that day.
Oh, cool.
And so like everyone's lined up on the wall after class and he's being like gifted this belt and there's a moment and Frizz was like, you know, honoring his progress. And I'm on the end of the mat, just like writhing in pain. And I felt so bad. I'm like, oh no, this is part of the video of Arrest getting his
Were you standing up. There or were you sitting on the ground?
No, I was lying on the ground. I was pouring sweat with pain. Smirka, Matt Ulrich really helped. The guy I was rolling with, Devin, he and Ulrich drove me to the hospital. It was kind of gnarly. So the injury was actually, I dislocated my elbow out the back. I completely tore the two ligaments on the outside and I chipped off a little bit of bone inside the joint. So it was, it made me very, very appreciative of having two arms in general.
Yeah, so, I bet. That's wild. Six or seven weeks ago, I was literally just teaching a bump sweep in beginner class. And when I did the sweep, I felt like it was almost like a piece of paper tearing in my groin. And so now, like weeks later, I'm still like not. I'm still, and I've been complaining about it on the podcast for weeks now. Like I'm being such a baby, but I can't get over the fact that it still hurts. It's ridiculous, but I can't imagine being out for the better part of a year.
You know, the worst, the most dangerous time I feel like is when you're starting to feel healed and then you're like, I think I feel good. I think I can go back. That's usually the most treacherous time.
I know.
But you know, it was like there's just so many people. You're going to pick up maybe an injury. You're going to pick up a knock. It's a physical game, but it was hard, but go to class. Like stay with it. Stay mentally plugged in, stay socially plugged in. Keep this your thing. You know, if you really want this, don't let it drift away from you, regardless of the circumstances.
I mean, those are the greatest words of wisdom for everybody that's listening around the world right now that has had a little tweak and they get off the mat. And it's, you know, I was talking to who was it the other night? I think I was talking to Eric. Maybe it was Eric Wright about it. Have you met Eric? Have you trained with him? He's one of our,
I don't think so.
Bluebell, great guy. You know, been training for about a year and a half, 2 years. And this guy, you know, had a bunch of stuff. He had like business travels and he just came back and he's like, it's just so much easier not to go. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier not to go. And you have to keep that practice up of literally, unless you are contagious, if you are injured, get to class and at least like watch and stay connected with your friends and do all of that. So Big Brothers, you watch UFC, you move down to Orlando, you train at Gracie Baja. Everybody there is like, hey, why don't you come compete? And you're like, I'm literally doing 70 hours a week of school. I'm not surprised that they were pushing you to be there more because you are the kind of person that one likes to have around. Have you always been friendly and social that way?
Nope.
In a word.
No, nope. It was funny. I was talking with a friend the other day and she had some question about like, where have you really found some of the most beautiful moments in recent months? And I said, I honestly think that I've increasingly appreciated finding small moments in other people's lives to celebrate. Mm. And I think that, I don't know, I think that it can, you can make small things special. And I don't mean like handing out medals for, you know, putting the dishes away. That's not quite it. But, you know, if a training partner competes and gets a medal, like, why not go out and have drinks? It's a great thing to do. It's a great thing to see them, their progress, to see something they've earned. You know, it's just, I think people like being seen and I like seeing others for who they are, what they do. And I just think, yeah, I guess.
Where does that come from?
I don't know, really. I mean, I think gratitude is probably the best attitude adjuster that one could ever have in life. And I think that that's sort of a daily thing that you have to think, brush your teeth every day. You gotta be reminded sometimes in the mundane or the monotonous or the routine of just how extraordinary your life is in many ways. And for anyone listening to this, if you have access to electricity, an iPhone, a computer, any, you know, there's a lot to be grateful for.
And this is like, for me, such like my work right now is in any given area of my life, I can choose to focus on what isn't or what is. I can focus on what is missing based on the criteria of what I think for some reason I'm entitled to. or should have, or I can focus on the fact that I've got this like cool, safe, beautiful little place to live in a great, beautiful little town with my dogs and my girl and my friends and jiu-jitsu and music. And like the list goes on and on. My life is incredible. But I can so easily and multiple times in any given day, my attitude can just tank when I focus on what I think is missing. Hey, My White Belt is brought to you in part by Origin. And if you're looking for a new gi, go to originmain.com and use the discount code TRICK10. Listen, Origin gis, in my opinion, are the best gis you can get anywhere in the world. And I've worn everything. And I know that there are like the brands where you go and you like spend a ton of money on a gi, and it's no different than any of the other gis that are made in Pakistan or China, but they have a funny little logo on it, so you think you're getting something great. When you buy a gi from Origin, you're actually getting a gi that is made by hand in the great state of Maine by people who love their job, are treated well, and it shows in the quality. So, gis, jeans, hoodie, I mean, you name it, they make it. But then they also produce the line of Jocko Fuel, which most of you listening have probably tried Go Drinks or Mulk or one of their other incredible products created by Jocko Willink. So go to originmain.com, use the discount code TRICK10, you'll save money, you'll get incredible gear, and you will support My White Belt.
Yeah, I think actually this has been a recent struggle in jiu-jitsu for me. I don't think I haven't come around First Colony as much. I've had a sort of a heart issue for the last like 7 years, and it's sort of evolved in ways that are not convenient. It's not a mechanical, it's not like a structural problem, so I don't need a transplant or anything, but it sort of impedes life at times. And gosh, even since I came back from my injury, it's been a haul. Sometimes I cannot complete class. Sometimes I can, but I feel terrible. Sometimes I can flow roll a little bit or positional spar a little bit before I have to stop.
Is it like an arrhythmia? Is it like AFib or something like that?
It's behaves like a coronary microvascular disease. So it's not the big vessels of my heart that would cause a heart attack, but it's the minuscule ones that are everywhere that seem to spasm. And so it mimics like a mini heart attack. And it will go into arrhythmia. Yeah. So when the two come together, it's time to sit out and just chill out. But I've really struggled, and like, I actually had to vent last summer to my coach, to Nate, at one point. I think I just word vomited on him, that I was struggling so much with the idea that jiu-jitsu is not going to be what I wanted it to be for me. I couldn't do the all in. I couldn't even get to the part that I enjoyed, which is the physical problem solving. I could drill and do technique, but by the time I even got to trying to roll, I was tapped out. And so, you know, it's funny because a lot of people talk about like jiu-jitsu is so good for your mental health. I'm like, yes, it is, in ways that I'm not going to give it up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, most drives home from class, all but maybe 1 out of 50, just this swirl of like disbelief that this is actually my existence, and frustration that I couldn't do what I wanted to do, envy that other people just get to do it normally.
Yeah.
So it's a serious adaptation process to try to figure out what can I do of jiu-jitsu and sort of make as much of it as I can, but not be able to really I don't know, indulge in it the way I would want.
What's the emotional impact of all of that behind the scenes?
I spend an inordinate amount of time some days worrying about if I'm in a state where I can go to class and participate tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's the only thing in my life I think I feel anxiety about.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would peg any type of anxiousness on me. I'm really not, but
don't seem the type.
Really not. But it's been something I've really had to wrestle with, struggle with, pray about, sort of come to terms with and make the best of. And I think I'm in a better place in the last few months, figuring out what I can do.
It's really interesting. So you're telling this story and it's clear in you that there's no quit, right? I mean, you could literally just go, yeah, I got a heart thing. I'm not going to do jiu-jitsu anymore. But it's just not how, yeah, you're shaking your head. No, yeah. Where does that, can you say more about that kind of like resolute attitude that says, I'm just not quitting, just not here to quit this?
I am a deeply stubborn person, Jim. Just really, really stubborn. I actually think it's kind of an easy calculation for me. I'm like, I get this frustrated doing half jiu-jitsu. I can't imagine how much more frustrated I'd be doing no jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, I'm grateful for what I can get. So if I can go to class and participate, I am grateful. I get to positional spar. That is a great day.
Like, yeah.
And so I'm always there for that. And there hasn't even been a thought, frankly, of quit jiu-jitsu. I'm like, I lose so much of a part of life that I really love.
I don't want to name names because I don't want to, you know, violate confidentiality. But there's, you know, there are a couple people at our academy over the last year that have had different kinds of cancer. And they have taken like literally just enough time off to get treated. Just enough time off to get treated, and they're back. Or people that have been through things that are like would give anybody a really good reason to like not train, and they have been like, I'm doing it. I'm going to do it to the extent that I can do it. Now, there are, you know, life circumstances, certainly. So what this isn't like not like shaming anybody who has like a legitimately difficult situation. Like there are a couple other people in our academy who have like some very, very, very serious things that are not only involving like their loved one's health, but also like their work situations, and the stress of trying to get there is just really too much. And even if they did, would plausibly compromise the people that they're serving at home. But all of this to say that for those who can do something, do it. Like whatever you do, don't make excuses. Right? Like, don't be somebody who is like, could be attending class and just has decided that they're not going to, that they're going to, well, here's what it comes down to really, Parker. Only you know if you're really giving it your all.
Yep.
Yep. That's it.
That's true.
Only you know if you're really giving it your all. And It's not only jiu-jitsu, but it's like whatever thing you're going to pursue in your life, only you know if you're giving it your all. Now, that brings us to this other part of your life. And the list, like I want to talk about the nonprofit that you support in Haiti. I want to talk about the fact that you're not particularly interested in jiu-jitsu for self-defense, but you and I have similar handguns, or the fact that, you know, we both love our dogs. All these different like things in our lives that are overlap. There are people all over the world today who dream of writing a book.
I was one of them.
And the difference between you and the millions of people around the world who have a story to tell, a story inside of them that they are compelled to tell, the difference between you and most people is you have written The Rage of Gin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wrote a book.
I did. You know, we're going to get a book out of you, Jim, soon.
I wrote a book. What? I wrote a book.
You did? Yes.
I wrote a book.
What am I thinking?
It's
awful. You have a second book, though. We've discussed this. You have a second book to write.
Second,
that's what I'm thinking.
I have a second book inside of me. But and we should have a conversation about that at some point in time. But yeah, no, I wrote a book. It's fine. It's fine. I wrote it with one of my best friends. He thinks it's great. I think it's okay. We wrote it so that we could get speaking gigs. It worked. We sold a couple
success.
We sold like 2,000 or 3,000 copies of it. I'm pretty sure most people never read it. And that doesn't matter because they paid for it and they booked us for speaking events.
Success.
Thank you very next. But
that's right.
But the thing is, like, so so let's just begin with this. What is the difference, in your opinion, between somebody who talks about doing something versus somebody who actually does the thing? And where does the force to get things done come inside of you? And how can you help people with this?
I think actually it kind of looks a bit like the not making excuses part. I don't know anyone who's happy that they made an excuse. You know, like, you can live with yourself maybe, but I don't know anyone who's actually happier and better off and more content with their life because they made excuses. I think there's some bit of you, like you said, you know, if you're giving it your all, you know, if you made an excuse and it's in there somewhere, it's going to scratch. And actually, I think it's funny, but I mean, I read voraciously. Book was my first word as a child. Like, I don't think I could actually read when I was holding up books and turning the pages. So I've always had that passion. And I had been screenwriting for a long time after film school. But honestly, part of the motivation was I read some really bad books. Like, some amazing books, but man, have I read some stinkers. And I think, yeah, but they wrote a book.
They wrote a book.
They did it. Like, they actually did that. And I'm just sitting here. Look at that.
I'm holding up a copy of my terrible book. I wrote this book.
I love the cover. You did it.
I wrote this book. I have a book that I wrote. You have a book that you wrote. Yours better than mine. But.
Oh.
So you did it. So then I guess I have all these like philosophical questions for you, because I think that you are a wise person. But so from an internal standpoint, why do so many people swim in and tolerate a life chocked full of excuses?
It's easy. Doesn't everyone reach for the easy button?
So easy.
I mean, I think most of technology is not the, oh, we're going to go to the moon type of technology. No, it's not. It's a little update to make your life a tiny bit more convenient. It's the newest version of this. We made it a little bit easier. We cut out one more step for you. I think that's how people function. We go for comfort. We go for ease. That's one of the reasons I love jujitsu people is that philosophy of, I heard someone say this once, it's always stuck, do something difficult every day.
Do something. No matter what it is. And I have found in my own life that, because I spent a lot of time living on the couch, blaming other people and making excuses. And the escape from that now is in other parts of my life, I just look and I go, if I wait to feel like doing this, it's just never going to get done. The days that I wake up, walk in my kitchen, make coffee, and get back into bed with it and scroll on my phone, those days are not nearly as good as the days when I get up, drink water, stretch, pray, meditate, read, intentionally stay off my phone, right? And like get going on my day. So let's just put a check mark next to that you and I have a choice. And ultimately, we are happier when we choose to do rather than talk about doing.
A friend gave me this great piece of art. It just says, discipline is remembering what you want. And I love that because it is in those moments you develop a discipline for something that you want. For some reason, you were motivated once to create a discipline, and motivation is just it's not a feeling, it's sort of a reason. And so discipline is remembering what you want, is that reminder of like, I'm going through all of this for a reason. Recall the reason. And that provides a little extra drive in those moments you're not feeling it.
I love it during an episode when a person says something that titles their episode. So this is...
You're welcome,
this
Jeff.
This is Parker Jameson. Discipline is remembering what you want. A team of excavators restoring Notre Dame make a stunning discovery beneath the floor of the cathedral, an unmarked sarcophagus. When CIA operative Ridley Samaras and her new partner Henry are sent to investigate the strange finding, a vengeful creature is unleashed in the city. And we find out that this is going to lead us into a global battle between a clandestine CIA team and
small team
that they are basically going to, well, as partners, as the partners trace the creature's path to unleash its final terror, they must prevent a global cataclysm at the most explosive place on Earth. This is going to bring people into like the legend of the Knights Templar. This is like an epic tale for the ages. Was this based on a true story? Just kidding.
Actually, it was, Jim.
Stop it.
Glad you asked.
Stop it. No, wait. I was being funny.
I know. You're hilarious, but you're also right. Those
are the only two things I've ever wanted to be.
So
hysterical,
funny.
And right.
So accurate. Yeah. They did. They found a sarcophagus below the floor of Notre Dame when they were excavating it after the fire. And no one had any record of what it was doing there, who this person was, why they were buried there. No idea. So that's the genesis for the story. When I read that headline, it was like, oh my gosh. And then everyone's like, and they're going to open it. And, you know, your reaction from having seen many movies is do not open that sarcophagus. And so they were going to. And I was like, that makes a great story.
That was actually a rejected line from Jim Croce's You Don't Mess Around With Jim song. You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't open sarcophaguses that are found beneath ancient structures. It didn't rhyme, so he left that out. But everybody,
it's a song for you. You can write that one.
I'm all set. You wrote it. You wrote it as a book. Wow, I can't. What a great.
Yeah. Cool, huh?
It's pretty cool.
Now, if you actually look up what was in it, it's a lot more boring. So I think you should just read the book instead and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, just absolutely read the book. What's the weapon? How do you pronounce the weapon that he uses?
So there are a few different pronunciations. I say karambit.
What does Ashi say?
I've only ever seen him type it.
Oh yeah. Karen.
He has one though.
Yeah, no, I know. So it's like this for those of you who don't know, can you describe a Karen bit?
It is a knife that looks quite a bit like the talon of a velociraptor. And it has a ring on the end, so you could put your pinky in it, which means it's very hard.
Wait. The talon of a velociraptor, as though that's a very common thing to know
it's
about.
It's cool, right? Yeah, yeah. Cool. Think of the raptor nail, you know, tapping on the floor in Jurassic Park in the kitchen. That's it. You can have one of those in your hand. I thought it was just sick when I saw it. And I was like, wait, why? I mean, I'm kind of a knifey person. Why have I never? Yeah. So I have this one.
She's holding you.
It's pretty nice, huh?
It is pretty nice. This all
it's vicious. So
all of this from somebody who's not particularly, you know why you're not concerned with self-defense? Because you don't have to be.
I have a very off-putting presence for troublemakers, I think. So I don't know. I worked in security in LA in nightclubs for a bit.
And, really?
I did. I didn't even really know jiu-jitsu then. But you want as a bouncer to not get into fights, you know, to be ready for one. But your job is really much more pleasant if you diffuse fights. And that's where I had to practice my persona. You do not want to fight with me, and you do not want to fight in front of me.
I don't want to fight. I don't ever want to fight. I don't even want to argue with you. I like you so much. So you wrote. So let's just, I want to do two things. Like the book, the idea behind the book is so compelling. And you are somebody who has had myriad creative pursuits from filmmaking, screenplay, writing. What else? You've produced a bunch of stuff and now you've got this book. You looked to your right when I said you've produced a bunch of stuff. I have you as somebody who has produced a lot of stuff.
My filmmaking brain was like, you've produced films. And I was like, nah, I wouldn't say. So that's what that was.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So, what's it like to have a book in your hand?
It's pretty surreal, actually. I mean, I published the ebook version first, and then, I mean, I remember the day when the first author copies arrived, which are, they have like a band around them. They're not for resale.
Yeah.
They're just so I can check that everything's in place. And I opened the box, and that was much cooler than seeing the ebook online. That was like, oh my gosh, this is a book. Like, this is an actual book. You pick this up off a shelf and read it.
Do you like the way it feels in your hand? Like, does the cover feel nice and the whole thing?
So Amazon's version, no. But there's another company that does printing for like bookstores and libraries and whatnot. And you can buy it from them too. But theirs is beautiful. It's soft. It's supple.
Yeah.
I love Amazon's is a little, it's okay.
If you're gonna have like a paper book in your hand, you want it to feel great. So what would the genre for The Rage of Jin be?
It's like an action adventure thriller.
And obviously you're a filmmaker. Are we dreaming about this hitting the big screen? is that what we're chasing around here?
A lot of people have asked that or suggested that, and many of them have not read to the end. When you get to the end, you might realize why this will just never be a film.
Okay, well, don't give it away.
It's cinematic, but when I say no one would finance or release this film, you would understand by the time you reach the climax. And
all right.
Ashi, though, can we just take a moment?
Yeah, here
talk
it comes.
Talk about the MVP.
Here it comes. Here,
of this podcast.
Here it comes, ladies and gentlemen. If you have got a bottle of anything nearby, get ready. I have a decaf coffee in my left hand and a delicious polar seltzer in my right hand. And we're going to say Matt the Ashi Kid Dolan. We're just going to call him Ashi, but get ready. Get set. Ashi. Yeah. What do you want to say about Matt the Ashi Kid Dolan? Cheers.
I've got water, but I'm drinking. First of all, if anyone listens to this podcast, they should know he's awesome.
Yeah, his is great.
I think that your gym is full of awesome people. I really just love being
very,
up there amongst you.
First
guys.
Colony is
so fortunate.
It's crazy the people we have.
Yeah. But there's something about Ashi that always stood out is like in a room full of great people, he is extremely generous.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the first things that comes to mind when 100%. I think of him is how incredibly generous he is on the mats as a teacher, as a coach. I've only gotten to see a fraction of what you have, but he picked up this book and has just been a champion for it, sort of.
It's how he is.
He really is. And I told him I feel extremely strange being on this podcast when he hasn't been on this podcast.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I could have sworn I invited you to come on a long time ago before the book was even a thing. Do I have that wrong? Have I never invited you to come on the show?
I felt like it was like I laughed it off.
I think you might have.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's great. Like, listen, here's the thing. The My White Belt audience is shockingly loyal and supportive. And I know that people will pick up the book and they will read it. And it'll be great. But you, apart from the book, you're a very compelling person. And I would say this, one of the things that you and Ashi both have in common, because you're both generous, you're both the kind of people that you want to have around, and you both are pretty mysterious at the same time. Like, there's, for both of the two of, yeah, and you know I'm right. Like, I see you, Parker Jameson, and I see Ashi. I don't think Ashi necessarily thinks that I fully see him, but I see him. And there is mystery. There is a story there that you guys ain't telling. You have a story that you ain't telling. Ashi has a story that he's not telling. And it's like, yeah, there's tons of like open-heartedness and generosity and encouraging and skill. And like all of the different things that both of you both bring to life. And there's a story behind the story. And if you tell me that there isn't, I don't believe it.
Well, it's been funny because as he's reading through the book, he'll like drop some piece of information to me. And I'm like, wait, you what? You did this? You know that? You did what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're like the most interesting man in the world. And we only know a bit. So I totally agree.
Well, then there is his wife, for crying out loud.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
He first asked me, by the way, to
be married to him.
I was like, he was like, by the way, do you know what my wife does? When he started reading this book about like a female special ops. And I was like, no, but this sounds super interesting.
Just so all of you know, Matt the Ashi Kid Dolan's wife is Jenna Dolan. Look up her wiki. She's the first female fighter pilot to fly a Harrier jet in combat. Like, what are we
talking? This is like Top Gun stuff.
It's crazy.
Amazing. And so like she's like a VIP to me, and I've never even met her.
Oh. She's so rad. I see her in the grocery store all the time. I've done like a couple of gun training classes with her at the same time. And she's like, it's so funny because she's this very feminine, lovely, lovely woman who like could kill all of us with her pinky without even like, I just kind of feel like she looks at all of our stuff with like our guns and our jujitsu. And she's like, aw.
So cute.
Yeah, you guys.
She'll blow you out of the sky too.
She is a fighter pilot. For what am I doing? I'm a former fat guy who talks about jiu-jitsu all the time. She's like this like warrior. And then there's like Ashi who like, oh God, bless America. I'm so glad that he got his brown belt because I get smashed by him daily. And I would way rather get smashed by him as a brown belt than as a purple belt.
Man, how deserved was that?
I was so stoked. Well deserved. So well deserved. I just really, yeah, that was a good. That was a good.
I wish I'd known he was getting it. I totally would have gone up there.
I wasn't there either.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I ordered the belt. I'm the guy. I ordered the belt like months ago, and there you have it. But I missed the award of it. I know.
You'll never get it back, Jim. You'll never get that moment.
No,
back.
It's okay though. I rolled with them. I rolled with them last night and with my groin. And like, not that it matters, uh-huh. But this is the greatest thing. So I'm teaching. I taught beginner no-gi. Was it last night? Monday night. Beginner gi Monday night. He came to the class that I was teaching, which is nerve wracking enough. And then I got to roll with him after, because I wanted to get like one brown belt roll. And like, I'm watching the people who were in my class watching me roll, and Ashi was being nice, and I was like, dude, don't be nice to me just because these guys are watching. Let's just do this. And at that moment, he like did a takedown, sent me ass over tea kettle, and like got like some awful position on me. And I was like, and then I looked at the people from class, and I was like, and this is how you try to do the thing that I was showing you last week.
What that guy did, it works. It really works.
What he did worked. What I did to get out of it didn't work at all. Because he knows exactly what I'm trying to do, and Ashi isn't having it. So funny. So I just want to get like a 30,000 foot view on something that I'm trying to get to the heart of it. Guns jujitsu, you described yourself as kind of knifey, which is like the Why Parker? Why all this stuff? Why guns and jujitsu and knifey sarcophaguses?
Let's be honest. I don't use the knives, like, except to open stuff, you know, like never stabbed anyone.
The knife that you just picked up is not a knife. This, listen to the sound of this. That knife, this is a knife that you use to open boxes with. The thing that you just pulled out is a thing that you use to like either open a wild wildebeest that you killed with your teeth in the middle of the woods, or some weird guy in a big cloak following you down a dark alley in Gotham.
But it can also open a box.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So this one is actually... this is the exact Karen bit that my character uses in this book. A friend got this for me for a very early birthday present because I didn't actually have this version. Ashi had it before I did.
Who makes it?
I think I need to get one. This is Fox Knives. It's a black Emerson Wave.
Is it legal?
It is extremely sharp.
Can you have it in Massachusetts?
I'm sure you can.
I'm sure you can.
I have a couple other types of karambits. They're big, they're fixed blade, they don't fold. And I don't know, I have like a katana because it's pretty, and I have a knife from Morocco because it's pretty, and the Civil War sword because someone found it at a garage sale and thought I'd like it.
Is it a real civil war sword?
Yeah. I mean, it's not pretty.
No, but it's cool.
It's cool to have one. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I like guns. Why do you like guns?
I think that for me, the world is just so crazy.
Isn't it, though?
The world is just so crazy. It's very, very rare, but every once in a while, somebody will come after me. Like most recently I made a post about like not being obese and like jujitsu helping if you want to not be obese. And somebody was like, you can be any size and be healthy. And I'm like, okay, here's two things are true. I'm here for jujitsu. That's why I'm here. I'm here to talk about jujitsu. My agenda is very, very, very clear. Try jiu-jitsu. It's changed my life. I think it'll change yours. If you are doing jiu-jitsu and you are feeling like you're having a hard time, I want to encourage you to stay in it. If you did it and you quit for one reason or another, I would love for you to come back. That's my agenda. That's why I'm here. Beyond that, I will only ever deal in truth. And that means I'll only have sponsors with products that I use. And philosophically, I will only ever deal in truth. And here's what's real. Bad things happen to good people around the world in private and in groups. And I want to be the person. So we had Matt Christensen on, who has Calm and Chaos. Do you know about Calm and Chaos?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Calm and Chaos LLC. And they are providing training for civilians who want to be prepared for things like the Boston Marathon bombing. He wants people to be prepared to stop the bleed, to save lives. He wants people to know how to skillfully and safely handle firearms, because the world is crazy. Now, the fact that I've got a tub of camp stoves with fuel and freeze-dried beef stew for when, you know, Armageddon happens, that's just because it's fun to be prepared for stuff. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, it's definitely like the world is crazy, but the idea of being prepared for crazy is a very satisfying and enjoyable pursuit for me.
It's a good one. It's funny because when I got my concealed carry license here in Mass, I remember a friend asked me if, like, kind of jokingly, he was like, "You feel really powerful now." I was like, "I haven't even had that thought. I feel like I have a great responsibility."
It's a huge responsibility. Yeah,
and I'm like, I can't. Like, it's really inconvenient sometimes to carry. Like, really inconvenient. But I cannot leave it behind because I just think I have the capability to do something and I've been trained to do certain things. I can't shirk that responsibility. I would never forgive myself.
Yeah.
If I had left it behind for convenience, but I could have saved somebody. And so, yeah, the odds, of course, are low, but the odds were low for everybody who's been involved in something like a mass killing.
Yeah.
You know, the odds were low for them too. So I don't think of it really, again, like I don't think of it for personal security, but I feel like my head is on a swivel for read the room, look out, you know, be ready for anything.
Have you done any stop the bleed training? Do you have any of that stuff?
I did a bit of tourniquet training. I need to do, I've trained up at Sig Sauer, which if you haven't gone,
I really want to go.
Fantastic.
It's great.
I do a little tourniquet training, but frankly, I need to go take one of the trauma classes because, like, carrying a tourniquet is, I mean, that's kind of essential too. If you're in a bad spot.
Yeah, no, I carry one all. So, like, this is my daily backpack. And I have gauze and I have a tourniquet courtesy of Calm and Chaos LLC. And I would say this, if you want to, I know that Matt is doing classes here. So if you want to come down to Marblehead and hang out and, like, we'll get some food and we'll learn how to stop the bleed and save a life. But so, okay. So I don't know if you've answered my question. Like, I just answered the question is, okay. So for you,
knifey,
not your knifey guns, knives, jiu-jitsu, your knifey, and is there anything else that you can say about your proclivity towards those things? Or is that just what you happen to like?
I just happen to like it. Like I said, I don't really think about jiu-jitsu in the sense of doing anything. Like, I just kind of thought, like, it would be a good base, sure, to kind of know what you're doing physically. But at the same time, if I was ever in a real life threatening physical altercation,
you'd pull guard.
Oh my gosh, the things I would do to that person are so illegal. So illegal. So that's sort of how I think of it. Like, yeah, there are certain things, but there are also certain things that are, you know, banned in jiu-jitsu and martial arts for a reason, because they do horrible things to the human body.
Yeah.
Like, those are probably more effective. I'm picking those.
They are. People don't, anybody that's going to really do harm to you probably doesn't need to have eyeballs anymore.
Exactly. Shh, don't tell anybody. Just saying. They don't need their fingers. Get rid of them.
They're good. They'll do well without them. They could, of course, just mind their own business and then they can keep their fingers.
It's a fight they didn't want.
It's a fair trade. For the person who wants to train but has not started, what are they missing? What are they missing out on?
Well, it's different for each person, I think.
This is the part where you get to sell the world on jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. I'm prepping with all the options here. Different at every school, different for every person. But I think the things that are pretty universally true, I think, again, the discipline. You're the kind of person who goes and does something difficult. Mm-hmm. That, I think, is a tide that lifts a lot of boats in your life. I think that for a great many people, and it's not me, but a great many people, their self-confidence has really changed. Certainly, you know, and so many others, that the health perspective, man, it gets people who haven't been physically conscious of themselves so much in a capability sense to start feeling more capable, to start caring more what their body can do, not just what does it look like. I think that's a terrific direction to take for overall health. And the people in jiu-jitsu, man, like,
I know.
I had
like,
this.
Like you.
Like you, Jim. Like the people we both know.
I know.
Have in common. Yeah. But like, we had this launch party for this book a little while ago, and it's just an amazing turnout. I'm so sad you couldn't be there. But next time, I'm so sorry. It was the season where everyone was sick.
It's the worst.
It happened. But I looked out and it was a terrific group of people. It didn't even matter why people were there. I mean, it mattered. But yeah. I just looked over this room of people and I was just so happy to see this collection of human beings that I care about in the room. And then I realized, like, man, like, at least a third of these people are from jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, like, I don't think that we can talk about the people in jiu-jitsu that we love without talking about Jeff Grossman just for a second.
Jeff G, right?
Jeff G.
Talk about a knifey person, okay?
That guy. That guy is so knifey. He's the knifiest.
The knifiest we know.
How would you describe Jeff Grossman? He's kind of knifey. Jeff Grossman really knifey. Is literally when I interview. Okay, so back to Liam for one second. So Liam goes to his first jiu-jitsu academy, and whoever the coach is there, not the school that shall not be named. This is a different academy.
Okay.
The coach says, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish? To which Liam says, I want to be Batman. And he wasn't kidding. He was like, I want to be Batman.
Is he asking for like $1 billion? Is that the secret?
No, he like literally just wanted to like be Batman. He like, that was his goal. That's why he was training jiu-jitsu. But now, let's go to Jeff Grossman. Jeff Grossman is Batman. Like, he is literally Batman. Every vehicle he has is the Batmobile. He is literally, you know that if you are someplace with Jeff Grossman and something really bad happens, he's throwing a smoke grenade down that he's been carrying in his back pocket for the last 12 years. And you're going to hear him. As the smoke fills the room, you're going to hear him whisper, finally. Am I wrong?
He'll probably have another weapon in each hand by the time it hits the floor.
He is
ready. He is ready and he's diligent. He's thought about stuff.
Like he's hearing
precise.
He is precise. You know? Yeah.
Precise in jiu-jitsu, precise in, you know, his armory.
He'll do these things where like we'll start with me and Butterfly and him on his knees, and then I'll put my foot on his hip like you're supposed to, and he'll look at me and he'll just say, I've been eating like a fat kid. And then we'll literally like straight ankle lock me with his waist. He will put
like part of his elbow between part of his belly and just like flex and I'll tap.
Jiu-jitsu is for everyone. No matter what you come in as, you can find a way to get your own submission there. That's brilliant. That's just, see that resourceful. You got to be resourceful.
The book is called The Rage of Jin, and Parker writes under the pen name of Ox DeVere. I'm going to put links to it in the show notes. And Parker Jameson, thank you so much for being here today. This is just, anytime I get to spend with you is such a joy.
Thank you, Jim. Likewise. I was like, this is going to be my favorite podcast I do. I'm pretty sure.
All right. So that was a conversation with Parker Jameson. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope that you will pick up a copy of The Rage of Jin. As always, thank you for tuning in to My White Belt. Go to mywhitebelt.com, sign up for My White Belt Wednesdays, pick up a t-shirt. You guys are the best. I'm Jim Trick. This is My White Belt. Train hard and train smart.